Is there a difference between Geneva and Gezeila? We start with Hilchos Geneva. We go into Hilchos Gezeila. You look at the halachos. A lot of the halachos seem very similar. It's almost as if we're retreading the same territory. So in a number of places in the Gemara, one word is used, and you wonder whether another word could have been used interchangeably. So I'll start with the Gemara that talks about how we're surrounded by Gezel all the time. So the Gemara in Baba Basra and Daf Kuf Samachayim and Aleph quotes some Rav Yudah Marav, Ro Begezel Amir Barayas V'Hakol V'Lashon Hara. The Gemara says it really means Hakol V'Avak Lashon Hara. So Ro Begezel, most people are constantly transgressing, the Gemara says, with respect to Gezel. They're constantly being ensnared by Gezel. So what does Rashi say? Rashi says, Ro B'nei Adam Chashudin Ala Gezel. They are suspected of Gezel, Ke'en Gezel. He says it's because it's like some sort of form of Gezel. Shemorin Lehetera B'masa B'matan, that they're constantly finding wiggle room in their business to justify actions that border on Gezel or are Gezel. In order to keep profits that belong to somebody else in their own possession, this is something that people in business are guilty of all the time. They say, it's not really something that the other person is fully entitled to. I worked really hard, therefore it's okay if I keep a few extra dollars. This type of justification, rationalization goes on all the time, and therefore the Gemara describes this as Rov Begezel. So the Chafetz Chaim in the Tumim, in his Sefer Sfas Tumim, so he talks about the factors that cause people, just regular people, not the biggest Rishayim, but just that causes regular people to be guilty on a regular basis of Gezel. So Chafetz Chaim says that there are two major causes for Gezel. One cause is what we might call conspicuous consumption. People want to keep up with the really, wealthy individuals, and in the general world, this is called keeping up with the Joneses. They want to keep up with the Schwartzes, keep up with the Rothschilds, want to keep up with the really wealthy Jewish families, and they see there's a lot of material wealth around them, so people will extend themselves. They'll make fancier weddings than they're capable of making. They'll buy fancier cars than they're capable of buying, and because of that, they'll get themselves into trouble. They'll justify keeping extra money that doesn't really belong to them, or collecting money or not returning money, so that they'll have extra funds in order to be able to buy all of these goods. So he says that that's one cause that is responsible for ensnaring even regular people with respect to Gezel. The second reason he gives is Mipnei Choser Yediyah. So this relates a little bit even to the Lashon of Rashi, that they're Morin Heter. The people find some sort of a justification because they don't know the halacha so well. They don't know that kovesh skar sochir is considered to be gezel. They don't know that shol shalom midas is a form of gezel. They don't know that there's a problem with shaleach yad v'pikadon. The people don't have a full understanding of exactly what constitutes an issa, what would constitute a problem of gezel. And the Pesachei Choshen, in his Hakdama to the Halachos of Geneva and Gezela, so he says he thinks that nowadays there's a third reason. So he goes on quite adamantly about this. He says that there's a Zilzul V'inyan HaSheker, that in our times, people are not so respectful of keeping their word, of respecting truth, that nowadays there is just a laxity when it comes to spewing out falsehoods and acting in ways which are disingenuous and deceitful. So he gives as a classic example a person who borrows a lot of money because they're going to, say, buy an apartment for children that they're marrying off in Israel. So he says there's a lot of pressure that people should buy for their children and so forth. And he says, and they know that they're not going to be able to pay up. They know they're not going to be able to make payments. So they borrow a lot of money from somebody, even from a gemach. They borrow a lot of money, and they know that they're not going to be able to make their regular payments. It's not as if there is any type of a thought process that they have a plan in place where they're actually going to be able to meet payments. And he says this is in violation to, certainly, Lo v'veinu mishalim is nikra rasha. but it's in violation of the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Sadi Zayin Sif Dalet, that if a person borrows money and then they waste all of the money so that they don't have anything to pay back to the lender, so that's considered to be an issur. You're not allowed to do that. So he says that it's not only wasting the money, it's knowing that however you're going to spend the money, you're not going to have money to pay back the lender. So he says that's an absolute issur. And this goes on all the time because people are just not honest about the means that they have to be able to meet their responsibilities and to be able to meet their obligations. They'll hire a worker to do a lot of work on their house, a construction contractor to do a major renovation of their house, and they know that they're not going to be able to pay. And then when the person asks for the money, they say, I'm sorry, I can't pay you right now. I can't pay you for the foreseeable future. And this goes on all the time. It's just that we're just completely consumed but by a culture of sheker. Then interestingly enough, he goes on to complain specifically about the pressure that is placed upon in-laws or upon parents to buy apartments for their children or for their son-in-law, for the children when they're getting married off to another family. And one family places a lot of pressure on the other family, or the children place a lot of pressure. And he says, and then the children have the chutzpah to take all of their wedding gifts and to give ma'isik sofim on their wedding gifts instead of, you know, paying back the parents who are, you know, pressured by them, you know, to make these major investments that they're going to put the parents into the poorhouse. He says that this is all, you know, in the realm of putting pressure on people not to be able to keep their obligations. So somehow he includes this all within Zilzul Binyan Sheker. That's already in the realm of the first reason of the Chafetz Chaim, of what we call spending too much for based on conspicuous consumption. But these are different causes that are relevant to everybody, so that would cast people in the category of Rov Begezel. So when we say Rov Begezel, I'll just throw out the question. Here's one, you know, good example. So Rov Begezel, does that mean Rov Begezel and Begneva? Or is it only Rov Begezel? Just one, you know, example for purposes of our discussion. So I think that we should try to focus a little bit on what are the differences between Gezela and Geneva. What are the different applications of Hilchos Geneva and Hilchos Gezela? There's a Magen Mishnah that makes a comment is on the Rambam. And the Rambam is talking in Hilchos Geneva about when a ganav is kone the shevach of an object that was stolen, when the ganav is not kone the shevach, when the shevach has to be returned. When it doesn't have to be returned, depends on yeish, not yeish, yishpicha me'eleh, not me'eleh. So the Magen Mishnah just makes sort of a passing comment. Yeah, and you know, all these halachos are true not only with respect to Hilchos Geneva, they're also true with respect to Hilchos Gezela. Don't think that there's anything magical about the fact that we have two different sets of halachos, one in Geneva and one in Gezela. They all kind of, you know, they all kind of go together. And if you look in Siman Shin Samech Beis, which also, you know, deals with a lot of these halachos, so the Gra there in Sifkatan Yud Aleph points out that a lot of the halachos that are in Shin Samech Beis that talk about these inyanim are really identical to all the halachos that are in Shin Nun Dalet. Just in Shin Samech Beis, it's talking about Hilchos Gezela. Hilchos Gezela begins in Shin Nun Tes, and Hilchos Shin Nun Dalet is talking about Hilchos Geneva. So why do we have two different sets of halachos? And furthermore, there are a number of halachos where we don't cross-reference. We don't say, oh, it's true over here, it's true over there. There's like a little bit of a different signon. So we need to understand a little bit which is which and what is what. So what's the difference, halachically speaking, as to whether I characterize something as geneva and whether I characterize it as gezela? So what's the main difference? The main difference is whether you have to pay kepel, right? Which is even relevant, bisman, is it? But the main difference, at least me'ikar adin, is whether kepel would have to be paid. So if something was stolen v'geneva, so then kepel has to be paid, a double payment has to be paid. And if something was stolen in v'gezela, so then you don't need to have a double payment. You have to pay it back, but there's no double payment with respect to gezela. So the Gemara in Mabakama daf ayin tes amud beis discusses what's the difference in terms of the description of Geneva and Gezela, and why is it that we have a different treatment with respect to Geneva than we have with respect to Gezela? So fundamentally, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri there says that the difference is that that a ganav is more sneaky. You know, a ganav is a much more sneaky person. A ganav steals clandestinely, steals when nobody is looking, steals privately, b'seis of a chashai, And a Gazlan is somebody who steals publicly and out in the open. And therefore, the Ganav is punished more severely than the Gazlan. Why is that? Because at least the Gazlan equates his respect for man with his respect for Kodesh Baruch Hu. He's violating Kodesh Baruch Hu's laws, and he's sinning, you know, and in front, just like he violates the Kodesh Baruch Hu's law and doesn't mind that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is looking at him. So he also steals from people and doesn't mind that everybody is watching and everybody's looking at him and that the person he's stealing from is right in front of him. So he has the same disrespect towards everybody. So they have the same disrespect towards everybody. That's okay. You make a suda, you don't invite anybody, so nobody's insulted, you know. But the Ganav is being disrespectful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't see him. He's not worried about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he's worried about other people, that other people should see what he's doing. So that's like somebody who makes a big suda and he invites everybody, all the plain people in the town, and doesn't invite the rabbi. He doesn't invite the king. So that's a big insult. You know, everybody in the congregation gets invited, but the rabbi or the president doesn't get invited. Ooh, that's a very big insult. So that's why a Ganav is punished more severely. So what is this distinction exactly between if it's done b'seiser, if it's done b'pirsum? So the Gemara on the top of the Amud there, on the top of Ayin Tetes Amud Beis, relates a little bit to what's considered to be out in the open and what's not considered to be out in the open. So the Gemara there, I'm sorry, Gemara in Baba Kama and Dapa Ayin Tetes Amud Beis. So the Gemara there quotes from Rabbi Elazar, somebody is hiding in a forest and they steal the animals over there. So then if they do tvicha, so then they have to be mishlaim tashlumei abava chamisha. If you're paying abava chamisha, you're also paying kepel. That's all related to geneva. So the Gemara asks, but everybody sees that the guy is, you know, there in the forest. If they see him, so then he's a gazlan. So the Gemara answers, no, since he's hiding there, it's true, they see him, but he's hiding in the forest, so therefore he's afraid, he doesn't want the owners of the animals to see him, so therefore he's considered to be a ganav. Rashi says, even though to punish a ganav, so you always need two edim, he says, yeah, there might be edim around, but he's not. It doesn't matter if he's afraid of the edim. What matters is that even if he's not afraid of the edim, what matters is that he's afraid of the Baal. So that's what makes him into a Ganav. And Tosa says, no, he's not afraid of anybody. He's he's doing this in a that a Gazlan acts b'makom makom goloi. And when the Gemara over here answers that the fellow is hiding, it means that he's hiding because he's afraid of everybody. That's why he's hiding, not just that he's afraid of the Baal. Okay, so then the Gemara asks for Ella Gazlan Hechidami. So Amar Rabbi Abahu Kigom Ben Yehoyahu Ben Yehoyada. A Gazlan is like Ben Yehoyahu Ben Yehoyada, the general David HaMelech, or Shlomo HaMelech, excuse me, the general Shlomo HaMelech. Shenemar, who is described as Veigzola Sachanis Miyan HaMitzri V'Yargui Geyo Bachanito, that there was an Egyptian fellow holding a spear, and he ripped the spear from him and killed the Egyptian with the spear. So he was very, very, very brazen. Very in your face. Gazlan's in your face. Rabbi Yochanan Amar. So everybody knows this. Everybody knows that a Gazlan is like, you know, that's everybody knows. But nobody knows the next part. The next part is Rabbi Yochanan. Generally speaking, Rabbi Yochanan wins out over Rabbi Yobo. So Rabbi Yochanan also deserves to be cited. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Kigon Baalei Shechem. Like the Baalei Shechem Shenema, Vayisimulo Baalei Shechem Me'arvim Maroshi Harim Me'igzulos Kloshe Yabu Aleim B'derech. The Baalei Shechem were ambushing people on the hills. So they're ambushing people on the hills. So the Gemara says that's why Rabbi Avo didn't hold like Rabbi Yochanan, because they're ambushing people. When you're ambushing people, you first have to hide, right? So he says since they were hiding, so therefore they were not gazlan. Rabbi Yochanan says no, they were only hiding so people wouldn't see them and run away from them. Not that they were afraid, not that the ambushers were afraid of people, they just wanted people to come near them. If the people wouldn't come near them, they wouldn't be able to ambush them. So we see that there's a distinction, that you could be hiding. You could be hiding, but there's one type of hiding which the Gemara says is a ganav. And there's another type of hiding which the Gemara says is a gazlan. That if they're hiding because they're afraid of people and they just want to wait until nobody sees them and then steal an animal or whatever, so that's considered to be a ganav. If they're hiding, not because they're afraid of people, but they're hiding because they're afraid that nobody will come near them so that they won't be able to ambush the people, so that's considered to be a gazlan. So that's why there's a discussion in the Rambam, the Rambam paskins in Hilchos Geneva, the list of Mizuyin is a ganav. If you have an armband that is considered to be a ganav. So the Ravid asks on the Rambam, what do you mean an armband that a list of Mizuyin is considered to be a ganav? But Rabbi Yochanan over here said that, you know, but over here we said that an armed bandit is considered to, even if the person is hiding, you know, a little bit, Rabbi Yochanan says that they're still considered to be a gazlan. You know, even the ambushers, they're still considered to be a gazlan. So how can you paskin that the person's a ganav? So the Magen Mishnah says that there are two different types of list and mizuyin, just like the Gemara says that there are two different types of ganav, and one of them is can be a list and mizuyin. So there's two different types of list and mizuyin. At the list, there's one type of list and mizuyin that's considered to be a gazlan. That's a list and mizuyin who is only hiding in the forest. Because he's afraid he's not going to be able to ambush people if they know he's there, but not that he's afraid of anybody. Then there's another type of list in Mizuyin that's like kind of afraid, like a person who goes into somebody's home carrying weapons. He's praying that nobody sees him. He's doing it very secretly, very furtively, very clandestinely, very surreptitiously. He's praying that nobody is going to see him. So why does he have the weapons? He has the weapons so that if somebody sees him, so that person will be very scared. If the Bialim see him, the Bialim will see that he has weapons and will be very scared, and then the Bialim won't approach him. It'll be easier for him to steal. But fundamentally, he's hoping that nobody is going to see him. So that's the list of Mizuyin that we say is considered to be a ganav. That's the sugi in Baba Kama and Daf Nun Zayin Amidal. Gemara there close to Rabbi Yochanan is saying that a Shomer Aveda, whose toin tan has gone, it has to be Mishalim Kepel. So we say, toin, a Shomer Aveda is treated like a Shomer Sachar. So Shomer Sachar is toin tan has gone, he'd be Chayav Kepel. He has to pay right away. So we say, no, we're talking about where it's a case of a listim and mizuyan. A listim mizuyan is a form of a ganav, but it's a form of ganav where if a person has anything stolen from them by a listim mizuyan, so then the person has weapons on them, so that's an onus. That's not so therefore it's an onus. The Shomer Beda otherwise would have been part of it, would have been off the hook. So see, the Gemara says it's a form of listim mizuyan, which could be a ganav. So that's what the Rambam paskins, is a form of listim mizuyan that could be a ganav. But the Rambam fundamentally, according to the Magen Mishnah, the Rambam fundamentally agrees with this notion of Rabbi Yochanan, that it's possible for a gazlan to be somebody who is hiding in the woods. And the Lecha Mishnah says the same thing in Hilchos Gezeilah, Paragalf, Hilchos Gezeilah. Lecha Mishnah says that even though the Rambam quotes, like everybody quotes, throughout Shas, nobody quotes Rabbi Yochanan. Everybody quotes Vayigzolas Achanis Miyana Mitzri. Rashi is fond of quoting this all over the place when he talks about what does it mean to really be a gazlan. Lecha Mishnah says, it's true, everybody quotes Vayigzolas Achanis Miyana Mitzri. The Rambam quotes that too, as sort of your quintessential example of a gazlan. But the Rambam doesn't mean it's limited to that. Of course the Rambam holds by Rabbi Yochanan. We mean it's going to reject Rabbi Yavoh and not hold by Rabbi Yochanan. Of course he holds by Rabbi Yochanan. He holds by Rabbi Yochanan's example as well. The reason that Rabbi Yochanan that the Rambam doesn't bring Rabbi Yochanan, the example of Rabbi Yochanan is because of the fact that it depends on circumstances. You can't say in every single case when a bandit is hiding in the woods that they're going to be a gazlan. It depends on the motivation for their hiding. That's what the Lecha Mishnah says. It's not a milsa psikasa. It's not something which is true across the board. That sometimes if they're hiding because they don't want anyone to see them because they're afraid of people, so then they'll be a ganav. That's what the Rambam says. The case of Rambam talks about list of mizuyin that's a ganav. But trey may mean a list of mizuyin hagu. But then there's another case of a person who's hiding, an armed robber, who's hiding in the forest, who is not afraid of anybody. He's just, he knows that people are going to be afraid of him. So when they see him, they're going to run away. So he doesn't want people to know that he's there. So they'll come very close to him. But as soon as they come very close to him, he's going to run out there and he's going to ambush them. So that's not considered to be a ganav. That's considered to be a gazlan. So therefore, it's not only the case of Benyahu ben Yehoyada, of Yigzol HaSachanis. It's even the case of Rabbi Yochanan. You can have cases of gazlan as well in that scenario. Okay, so that's ganav and gazlan. So the Rambam fundamentally doesn't have this distinction that Rashi hints at over here, that it all depends on whether you're afraid. In order to be nigdar as a ganav, it depends on whether you're afraid of the bialim or not. Are you afraid of the person you're stealing from? Even if you're not afraid from anybody else, but you're just afraid of the ganav, just afraid of the bialim, so then that makes you into a ganav. So the Rambam seems to follow the approach of Tosfos over here. Tosfos says that what is essentially the distinction between the Gazlan and the Ganav. Says Kloma Sheosib Makam Galoy, and if you do in a public place, indicating that you're not really fearful of anybody, as opposed to somebody who steals in a private place, which shows that they're really fearful of somebody. But whether the Bailim ultimately see the Ganav or don't see the Ganav is neither Male nor Morid, Lomalev Lomorid, with respect to this particular designation. And in fact, if you look at the Gra, the Gra over here, I think the Gra in Simon Shin. Wait, where's the? Do I have over here? Hold on. The Shulchan Aruch here gives you the distinction between Ganav and Gazlan as well. The Shulchan Aruch says, "Ezu Ganav Lokach Maman Odom Beseser Ve'en Abaylim Yodim." So the Gra in Sif Katan Yud Dalid says that Umashi Kasu Veina Bailim Yodim, that which the Shulchan Aruch says over here, that in order to be a Ganav, it's that the Bailim don't know about it. He says, Latavka, Tipa'amim, Afshi Yodim, Abe Ganav, Kigom Listim Izuyan. That sometimes, even if the Baal knows, the person can be a Ganav, like in the case of Listim Mizuyin. What really matters, and this appears to be the approach of the Rambam as well, what really matters is the attitude that the robber brings into the act. I saw that one, at least one source that I looked at, there was a, as far as English translations are concerned, so they say that, so they translated Ganav as thief, and Gazlan as robber. You know, the thief has more the connotation of, you know, you're afraid of people or whatever, you're doing it like in a sneaky way. And the robber is, you know, you're like a bad guy, a robber with your weapons and you're running around and Bonnie and Clyde and all that, you know, the cop, you know, cops and robbers or whatever. So that's what it's all about. If at the end the Bailim happened to see, you know, so it could be the Gazlan is very, very brazen, even though the Bailim don't know about it. And it could be the Ganav is very, very scared, but the Bailim do find out about it. So it's just in your Stam default case. In the case of a Ganav, the Bailim won't know about it. In the case of the Gazlan, the Bailim will know about it, but it's Lavdavka. It doesn't always have to work out that way. So that seems to be the way in which we classify it. However, this classification doesn't always work out so perfectly in terms of every single manifestation, because I quoted for you a bunch of the other Gemaras. These Gemaras are strewn throughout Baba Metzia for the most part, of cases where it doesn't appear to be some sort of a brazen act against the Bailim, and yet nonetheless we characterize it as a Gezela as opposed to a Geneva. So, for example, and this is these examples are brought in the Sefer Shmaitis of the Gezela. So, for example, in Bava Metzia Daf Chav Vav Amud Beis, the Gemara talks about a notel aveda, that somebody is notel aveda amenas legozla. So the Bailim are nowhere to be found. It's a lost object, but the person picks it up amenas legozla, so that person is considered to have dino kigazlan. Or we mentioned the case, this is in Baba Mesiyah Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. The person is kovesh skar sochir, so that's considered to be a gazlan. Shalef yabit pikodon daf mem aleph is considered to be a gazlan. Shol shalom midas daf mem gimel is considered to be a gazlan. These are all cases, at least a din of a gazlan. These are all considered to be cases, according to one mandam. These are all considered to be cases where we do not apply the characterization of ganav, because there's no kind of, you know, sneaky theft which is going on, but rather we apply the characterization of gazlan. So it appears that the main purpose of the distinction which is drawn between ganav and gazlan in the Gemara and Baba Metzia and Daf Ayin Tes Amud Beis is not so much to limit our characterization of who's a gazlan, but rather to limit our characterization as to who's a ganav. Remember that the consequences are going to be much more severe in the sense, in terms of how we're going to, if we're going to define somebody as a ganav, so then the person's going to be chayav kefil. So we say that's much, much more limited. It has to be kind of a sneaky theft from the Baalim itself in order to be considered to be a ganav. So what then are, you know, some of the other ramifications other than the Chi of Kepel that, you know, play into this Ganav Gazlan distinction? So there's a question that is asked by Rabbi Tzalel Ashkenazi, that somebody asked the following question. Rabbi Tzalel Ashkenazi was posek, I think he lived in Eretz Yisrael during the 16th century, around the time that the Shulchan Aruch was written. And Rabbi Tzalel Ashkenazi was asked, why is it that we know the Aseres HaDibros? This is kind of like, you know, the ABCs of Gnevu Gezela, right? The Aseres HaDibros says you can't steal. So everybody knows that you can't steal from the Aseres HaDibros, but it doesn't mean you can't steal. It means you can't kidnap. So the Aseres HaDibros, when it says lo tignav, it means you can't kidnap. So he says, kidnapping. I just read the Sugi and Baba Kama. They spoke about that when you're doing something very brazenly and out in the open and you know, and directly confronting the Bialim, so that's considered to be gazela. So why did the Torah use the word, the wrong expression? If the Torah really wanted to say that you can't kidnap, shouldn't it have said lo tigzo? Why does it say lo tigno? So that's the question that the questioner asked by Bitzal Ashkenazi. So he answered, he said, why are you asking me from lo tigno? Why don't you ask for the psukim that talk about kidnapping? The Gone Vishim Mecharo, that it says that when you steal a person and you sell him, so then most you must. So the psukim that very directly talk about the kidnapping and talk about, you know, how there's a death penalty, you know, when you kidnap somebody, you use them, you sell them, those psukim very specifically use the word gonev as opposed to gozel. So he has a very interesting explanation as to why these are in the category of geneva as opposed to gezela. He says, what's the thing with geneva? Because of the fact that it's so secretive, so therefore, nobody knows about it. You know, there's a machlokas, which is brought, I think, the Gemara of Baba Kama brings in Daf Samach Bavamid base, one other place, and it's also, it's the Mishnah and Kalim, basically citing the Mishnah and Kalim, machlokas to the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon, about whether we say Stam Gezela is this Yish Bailim, or Stam Geneva this Yish Bailim. It has to do with if an object is stolen, and then there is a, and the person who stole it has a machshava to utilize the object as a kli. So this is a mekabel tumah or not mekabel tumah. So it depends on whether he's sort of like the bialim over it at this point in time. Was there yish? Was there not yish? So the chachamim work with the assumption over there that there's more likely to be yish with respect to geneva than there is with respect to gezela. Why is that? So it's like somebody sideswipes you. You know, you're driving your car, you get sideswiped by somebody. So what is going to make you more likely to give up on recovering damages from the person or from their insurance? Whether they did it deliberately or whether they did it by accident or whether you have a chance to look at their license plate. So it's probably the latter, whether you have a chance to look at their license plate. So that's what the Chachamim say. The Chachamim say that when there's Geneva, so the Bialim don't know who stole it. So therefore, they're more likely to be Miyayish because they didn't see what happened. When there's Gezela, sure, it was much more brazen and the person is much more scary, but nonetheless, at least they got a good look at the person. So therefore, there's less possibility of Yeish. And Rabbi Shimon says the other way around, but Pashtus is like the Chachamim. So Abitzal Ashkenazi says this is kind of like what the idea of Geneva versus Gezela is all about. So with Geneva, the idea is that there's a giving up of hope. It's like this thing is considered to be avud. It's considered to be lost. It's like yush, because of the fact that you don't know who took it under what circumstances or whatever, as opposed to Gezela. So when there's a kidnapping, he said, so for sure, in this particular case, the person, when there is an outright Gezela that takes place. So he says that Hainu Taima da Asuyin Bali Zroa Lipo Vekivan Shiyadava Bo Yisod the Nimka Al Kopanim Yibdu Vare Enu Avud Masha Enkain Beganov the Loyadava Adam Gnevasa Vare Avud the Olam. So he said that there's a distinction between a case of gonev nefesh and a case of gozel nefesh. And I'll explain to you what I mean. He says this halacha, that lo tignov, the reason why it's written lo tignov in the case of kidnapping is because it's only a halacha that there's an onish misa, that you're going to give a capital punishment to somebody who commits kidnapping if they do it in a fashion of geneva. What do you mean a fashion of geneva? Where it was done with nobody else noticing. In other words, the person who's stolen becomes the lost object. The Bialim become his relatives and his friends. So if it's done in a fashion of Geneva, where his relatives and his friends are not there to see what happens. So that's when there's an onesh misa, because the person is lost. They won't be able to be located again. But if it's done in a fashion of gezeila, so what does it mean, a fashion of gezeila? That means that if the person was stolen in front of everybody, that it was a public kidnapping, so then he says there would be no onesh misa, because we know who stole him, we know, you know, where the person went, we know what the circumstances were, and we're going to more likely be able to track down the gazlan in such a case. So that's a very big chiddush. It's a very big chiddush. I think Mechaskinach says it too. It's a very, very, very big chiddush to say that gonev and nefashos is only an onesh. Obviously, it's going to be usher to kidnap somebody, even if it's in the form of a gezeila. He's not suggesting otherwise. But he's saying, in terms of the onesh misa, he says, is only going to be applicable in the form of geneva. And that's why the Torah uses the lashon of geneva, because it's the same idea. All the family and friends who would have had the opportunity to track down this person are going to give up because it was geneva. He was stolen in the dark of the night. Without any trace or without any clue. So therefore, they're more likely to give up as opposed to when it is done in a more public fashion. So that's kind of one very interesting manifestation that one wouldn't necessarily think about. So Minchas Chinuch says, let's focus a little bit on the on what really is kind of the main trigger over here with respect to Geneva. You'll see that elsewhere the Rambam even talks about the possibility of a geneva with respect to a shomer who does a maise geneva on an animal that's in his possession. Okay, even though he's not sneaking into the Bailam's home, this was given to him. The Bailam gave him the animal, you know, for shmira purposes. But he's still, you know, doing it in a fashion which is very sneaky. So I guess you could still call it geneva. But the chiddush is that the Rambam says there has to be kind of like a maisa. There has to be a maisa geneva. A maisa geneva in order for the person to be chayev kefil. So the Minchas Chinuch says, if you look at the halakos that we have, even in this siman shin mem ches, there are a couple of things here that appear to be stated much more stringently when it comes to geneva than when it comes to gezela. So you probably had a shir already on genevas akum on gezel akum. But he says there's a difference in the formulation. Look at the Rambam. There's a difference in the formulation here too as well. The formulation of the Rambam, the formulation of the Shulchan Aruch, Sif Beis is what? Echad ha-gonev mamon Yisrael, or ha-gonev mamon shel goyim. That geneva, it doesn't really matter whether the mamon is of a Yisrael, whether the mamon is of a Gentile, it's exactly the same prohibition. When the Rambam talks about Hilchos Gezela, you look in Perek Aleph of Hilchos Gezela, so the Rambam doesn't include in his basic description of Gezela that it also encompasses people who are not Jewish. Then he just goes on to say, oh, and you know, it applies to all kinds of, the next sif, he says it applies to all kinds of different circumstances, including that you can't, you know, steal from a nakri either. But it's not clear that this is in the definition of gezela, whether this is just kind of, you know, one of the side dinim. And in fact, there's a discussion. Maybe when it comes to gezela, it's a separate isser. It's an isser chil Hashem or something like that. Maybe it's not necessarily an isser on a deraisa level. So the Minchas Chinuch says that it could very well be that only genevas akum is the oraisa, and gezelas akum is the rabbanim. Now, of course, you can't do it no matter what. Even if it's the rabbanim, you can't do it either way. But he says that it really depends upon the nature of the isser. He says that the when it comes to gezela, okay, gezela is prohibited because HaTorah asra mamon chavero. This is why gezela applies to all these cases of shol shel midas, kovish skar sochir, shleach yad, because the Torah says that you're not allowed to take or misappropriate or misuse or abuse the mamon of your chaver, the mamon of your fellow, okay? So however that happens, even if it's a passive act, that would come within the framework of gezela. However, when it comes to geneva, what the Torah is prohibiting is the mida hagrua hazos bi'atzma. It's the mida of committing an act of geneva. So the mida of committing an act of geneva is not going to depend upon who you do it to, because the mida grua is going to be there whether you do it to a Yisrael or whether you do it to an Akum. As opposed to Gezel, I could say, well, the whole problem with Gezel is that you are misappropriating Mamon Chavero. If it's not Mamon Chavero, so then it might not be us on a Araisa level. What? This is in Siv Mitzvah Reisha Chaf Dalet in the Minchas Chinuch. Okay, Siv Katan Dalet in the Minchas Chinuch. And the Minchas Chinuch says that this has ramifications with respect to Siv Aleph of Simen Shin Mem Ches as well. He says this kind of in a matter of fact way, but the implication is very clear. What does it say in Siv Aleph? It says the Geneva is Aser Afilu Derech Schok. That's what we had Afilu Amanas Lameka. Even if it's derech schok, apilu amenas ahatzi. Even if a person does geneva kedei l'shalem tashlumei kefel, okay, or he does the kedei l'tzaro to play a practical joke, so all of or to cause temporary distress. So all of these things are going to be prohibited. So he says, why do we prohibit all of these things in the framework of geneva? Because even if you're not actually ultimately causing harm, what is usur when it comes to geneva is the mida gerua of geneva. The mida gerua being this sneaky, conniving person who's gonev das kono, whatever, to act in that particular fashion, that mida gerua that's described in the Gemara, so that's what's prohibited. So therefore, gonev amenas lemekot is going to be a problem. The implication is that gonev al menas lemekot, when it comes to gezela, is not necessarily a problem. In fact, the Psak Halacha is, this is Simen Shin Nun Tes already, when you start Hilchos Gezela, is that if a person is Gozel knowing that they have the Tashlumin already, so then they're allowed to be Gozel under those circumstances. So Pashas, you could say, maybe the two things are different. The Gemara in Baba Basa, Daf Tezayin, talks about how Eov would be Gozel from Yisomim, so he would be able to pay them back in better merchandise or in better quality repayment, better quality Tashlumin, when he would steal from the Yisomim. So there's a question, what do you mean? Are you allowed to steal Amenas Lemekot? So some of the Meforshim in the back of the Gemara in Baba Basra asked that question. So they say, well, maybe it's different. Toras Chaim talks about this. Maybe it's different because Eov was an Akum. And an Akum is not subject to this extra level of the Halacha, that Gonev Amenas Lemekot is Aser, and therefore he was allowed to be Gozel Amenas Lemekot. Others say, well, Eov maybe just didn't learn Torah. Not necessarily. He lived, according to the Mandam, he lived during the days of Moshe Benu. Maybe, you know, the Torah hadn't yet been disseminated yet. So he didn't know that this particular thing was Aser. The Bach gives a different explanation. The Bach says, no, maybe there's really a distinction between Geneva and Gezela. And he says that when it comes to Geneva, we're worried, Shelo Yagil Atzmo Bekach. Those are the final words of Sif Aleph in the Shulchan Aruch here in Simen Shin Mem Ches. And this might only be applicable with respect to Geneva, which is done secretly and furtively. Maybe Gezela, which is Befarhesya, this is not Shkiach. You could say, based on the Minchas Chinuch, a slightly different twist of the way that the Bach says it, which is not a question of shchicha and lo shchicha, but a question of which that one iser is in order to prevent a person from committing a mida grua, from inculcating a mida grua, that's geneva, as opposed to gezela, which is there gezela? Well, you mechasim moment, we're not mechasim moment. So therefore, if ultimately you're not being mechasim moment, so therefore that shouldn't be a problem. So that's one. So the Minchas Chinuch suggests that Gozel Amenas Lemekot might actually be fundamentally permissible. It's a Shach and Shin Nun Tes, which clearly doesn't seem to hold that way. But the Minchas Chinuch seems to say that that would be another possible nafkamina. And a third nafkamina that he alludes to is the Halakha of Ben Bagbag. What's the Halakha of Ben Bagbag? The Halakha of Ben Bagbag is stated in Baba Kama Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis. And that is that we know that we have a halakha of dinah linafshe, that if a person sees that Reuven sees that Shimon is holding his stolen object in Shimon's possession, so Reuven has, if it's it's clear and unquestionable that this is the stolen object that belongs to Reuven, it's in Shimon's possession, so then he has a right to grab that object away. Okay, the details of this halakha are discussed by the Mechaber and the Rambam in Siman Dalet. So Ben Bagbag says that when Reuven grabs his object back, okay, so he can only do it if it's out in the open. They're also lignov shelo mehaganov, but not if he's going to do it in a fashion of gneva. You're not allowed to be gonave that which belongs to you from the ganav. You have to do it in a fashion of gezela, but you're not allowed to do it in a fashion of gneva. Now it happens that the Rambam doesn't codify this halacha ben bagbag. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't codify this halacha ben bagbag, but the Minchas Chinuch notes that the Smag does. The Smag does codify it. Venera the posik kavase. Venera midrav. Not only does it appear that the Smag paskins like ben bagbag, but Nira midrav, he goes on to say to humina Torah the nichla b'lav, that this is actually considered to be included within the lav of lo tigno. So therefore he says that it could be that this is another distinction. He says that since the problem is an issue of midos, so from the perspective of midos as well, it would be improper for even a person who has the right, the af shelo also ligno, even though he has the right to take that which belongs to him, he's not allowed to do it in open of geneva, but there would be no such restriction with respect to gezela. So suddenly, what do you know? It's not necessarily only about the kefil. We have all kinds of potential manifestations that or potential ramifications that would arise based on whether we classify an act as an act of geneva or whether we classify the act as an act of gezela. So this is kind, and this would also explain. According to the opinion of the Minchas Chinuch, so it could very well be that what Eov did was, you know, perfectly permissible based on the fact that he was doing it in a fashion of gezela as opposed to geneva, but he wasn't ultimately being mechasim amon chaver. Now, this idea that it could be based on midos, I want to just step back for a second and talk about the midos issue, okay? So this idea in the Minchas Chinuch is with respect to whether the lav itself is characterized by midos, meaning that geneva, he says, is a lab which is based on the inculcation of or the manifestation of a mida grua, as opposed to gozel, which is not. So therefore, I'll say that if there is no technical gezela, when a person says gozel amenas lemeket or amenas letzair or something like that, so then it won't be included within the lab. But that doesn't mean that there isn't an independent value or an independent reason for a person to try to integrate proper midos anyway, even in the context of something which might be gozel. Now, if it's a situation where the midos, the good midos that arise from doing a ma'aseh gezela like with the Eov, might outweigh any kind of mida grua that, you know, would otherwise be inculcated because the gezela itself is not considered to be an act of a mida grua. So maybe then that's something that would be permissible. But if I don't have that countervailing consideration, I still do have to worry about midos. Mitzad what? Not necessarily mitzad lo tigzo, but mitzad midos, right? So even if I'm going to say, for example, that Gezel Akum is not Asum Midaraisin, it's only Asum Midarabanan. So at least on a Darabanan level, I have to worry, again, even if there's not going to be a problem of Midos in terms of the Isser, that the Isser is just an Isser Darabanan, it's maybe unrelated to Midos, but I still have to worry about Midos. That shouldn't be out of the calculation. The only question is whether the is whether the diminishing of a person's midos is part of the definition of this lav, or whether it's not part of the definition of this lav, and therefore, even though your midos might suffer, it might technically be permissible on a deraisa level, sometimes on a derabanan level, for you to do something. But if it's still going to be something which is contrary to fostering proper midos, it might be usur for a separate reason, based on v'alachta b'drachav, that you're supposed to inculcate proper midos in the service of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So I'll tell you a story, okay? This story is not directly related to the Geneva Gzela distinction, but it's related to the midos calculus. So we know that tos akum is technically mutter, right? And we have the long bar heitev, right? You know, that's on the side of the Shulchan Aruch and Ilkos Geneva, Ilkos Gzela. Forget exactly what siman is on, but you'll find it eventually, where the bar heitev talks about I think it's later on. Where the Bar-Hetev talks about how even though Tos Akum was something which is technically... oh no, it's right here. I'm sorry. It's not later on. It's right here. It's Sif Katan Hey. Even though Tos Akum is something which is technically permissible, but nonetheless, he says, I'm writing something that is Anik Kosev Zos Lidos. Shereisi Rabim Godlu Veheshivu Mitol Shehitu Akum. I saw many people who got rich from a toast that an Akum made because they said, oh, okay, this is not Gezel Akum, it's just Tos Akum. Below it's Lichu, but ultimately they were not successful in the end. V'yadun Eksem L'Timyon, and they lost everything that they had. V'lo Inichu Acharem Baracha, and they did not leave a bracha or any blessing in any of their possessions for future generations. But on the other hand, there were people who were mekadei shem shemayim ve'gzivu tayu sa'akum, like there was a story in Yerushalayim, Yeshua ben Shetach, v'dava chashuv, gadlu ve'yeshivu v'tzlichu v'nichu yisom le'olam. So they were very, very successful. So what is he saying? He's not redefining the yisur. He's not saying that Tos Akum suddenly becomes usur in its own right. He's saying that there is a separate consideration of doing the right thing. And even though he mentions Kiddush Hashem, which is one of sort of the explicit reasons why one should engage in Tos Akum, he doesn't necessarily indicate that the people who took advantage of Tos Akum, had they not taken advantage, it would have been a Kiddush Hashem. Just saying they shouldn't have taken advantage because it's just not the right thing to do. So here's what happened. When I was a smicha student here at the yeshiva, and I was also going to law school at the same time. So when I worked for a law firm during every summer after my year of law school, you worked in a law firm, and that way you would be able to ingratiate yourself to the law firm. They make an offer to you afterwards. You could work there full time, also help to pay your law school tuition, whatever they paid you over the summer.
If you don't get
a summer job, you could be in serious trouble. Well, after my first year of law school, I went to Moresh HaKol. But after my second year of law school, I got a job already. So they put me up in housing at NYU, so I could be near the place that I was working downtown. I made a little bit of deposit for the housing. Then at the end of the summer, I kept on waiting for them to send me a bill for whatever I owed them for staying there for the entire summer. They never sent me a bill. So I called them up and I said, I still owe money. And they said, no, according to our records, you don't owe anything. And it was like a couple of $1,000s. It was real money for, a Talmud and Yeshiva in those days. So they said, no, you don't owe anything. Don't worry about it. I said, no, I'm telling you, look in your records. I paid a down payment, and that was the only thing I was asked. So they said, oh, the deposit. You mean you never got your deposit back? You're supposed to get your deposit back. We'll send it in the mail. I said, no. So a few days later, I got the deposit in the mail. And not only did they not charge me for all the money that I owe, but they even sent me my deposit back. So I figured there's something, what am I have to do over here, okay? Now, I don't know who owns NYU, but the assumption is, so it's a conglomerate, whatever, it's a bunch of investors. Maybe there's no din of ownership. How is that? An Akum, maybe it was owned by Leonard Stern, I don't know. But the assumption was that this was in the category of what wasn't owned by Yisrael. So I asked a posek at the time, I decided that I can't just, leave this alone, nobody in the room. And who said, it would be appropriate to return it if it would be a Chilul Hashem otherwise, but here they're telling you not to worry about it, or if it would be a Kiddush Hashem, but nobody would really care less if you return it. Nobody's good. It's not going to be a front page headline, so just forget about it. So I told this to my chavrusa at the time. My chavrusa was very excited. He said, so you just saved yourself a lot of money, so you should buy me dinner to celebrate. It didn't sound right to me, so I don't know. I didn't buy him dinner. So I came back to my room, and my roommate at the time was Menachem Jacobowitz. Menachem Jacobowitz is a dayan for Eretz Chaim. He writes a lot of the chuas for Marei HaBazak. So he's a dayan in Eretz Yisrael. Now, he wasn't then, but we were roommates at that time. So I told him everything that happened in the Pesach and so forth. I said, okay, so I guess, I'm free and clear now. I did everything. I asked the Shaila and whatever. So he said, yeah, but what about your midos? What about your midos? And you live there an entire summer and you're not to pay money, what about your midos? I said, midos, yeah. So he got me, so I called again. I couldn't get through to them at all. Finally, I said, I have to talk to whoever is your boss, and I absolutely will not let this go, and I insist. And I drove them absolutely crazy until a few days later, I got a letter from them a really angry letter saying, according to our records, you owe the following sum of money. How come you haven't paid? It's already 5 months past due. Really angry letter. So I turned to my roommate and said, you know, I don't even have the money anymore. I'm just like a starving yeshiva student at this point. So I asked him to loan me some money. So he loaned me the money, and I eventually paid him back. And I paid for this. But that's the idea of the midos. The point of the Minchas Chinuch isn't that you don't have to worry about midos if it's not geneva. The point is that the midos are be'etzim part of the definition of geneva, as opposed to be'etzim being part of the definition of geneva. Okay. Now, there's an interesting couple of comments that Tosfos Rid makes in a couple of places in the Masechta. One on Daf Nun Hayam Beis. And the other is on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. On Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis, the Tosfos Rid in Bava Kamma. So there the Tosfos Rid says that this is a halakha that we have later on. I think it's Simon Shin Sama Gimel. That talks about how a gazlan who steals something, let's say that the object by itself just becomes no good anymore. It becomes useless because Pesach passes and it was chametz and now it's chametz shavah lava Pesach. So the person's gazlan's allowed to say what? He's allowed to say harei shalcha lefanecha. So he says this halacha that you're allowed to say harei shalcha lefanecha. He says also is something that only applies to a gazlan. He says it doesn't apply to a ganav. He says only a gazlan has the right. Yeshiva segzela shegazel that this is something you know that it's simply a direct obligation to pay back the object itself. Once you pay back the object itself, so therefore you're off the hook. But he says with a ganav, so you have a shalem yeshalem. You gotta make sure that you make the person whole and you took this responsibility upon yourself. Once the object was, because the Ghana makes a kinyan, so he makes a kinyan that there has to be a maisa geneva, so once the object becomes part of the Ghana's possession, then the Ghana always has to make good, and he's not allowed to simply get away with Horatio Khalifanecha. Very interesting. I didn't see anybody else who says this, and later on in Simon Shin Samuel Gimel, I didn't find anyone who says, oh, this halakha is only applicable to a gozel and it's not applicable to a god. I didn't find anybody who said it, but also another very interesting manifestation this of how we're more machmir with respect to the obligations that we impose upon the god. And the other thing that he says is that if you're later on in Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, he says that if you're the ganav, because of the fact that there has to be this act in which you're taking from the bialim, that's sort of the definition of ganav, that it's a maisa gneiva where you're going in and you're sneakily stealing from the bialim. So if it's not from the base habilim, it's a ganav mina ganav. So therefore, you're not going to then be saddled with all of the liabilities of a ganav, and you're not going to be chayev kefil in such a case. But he says, but it's still considered to be a maisa gzela. It's still a maisa gzela. He says, you know, insofar as the person is still considered to be a gazlan. But a ganav, he's not going to be considered under those circumstances. In other words, there's a higher threshold to be considered to be a ganav. But once you're a ganav, so that imposes a much greater liability. Okay, so that's an interesting thing. Now I just wanted to add a couple of final thoughts regarding this dichotomy. So I was wondering. I don't think that anybody says this, but there's a discussion at the very end of Simen Shin Mem Ches regarding a person who steals Bishogig. This is the very, very end of the Ramah in Sif Ches, that a Mishaleach sends a Shaliach to retrieve an object. The Shaliach doesn't know that the object is a stolen object. So if everybody knows... So then we say that there's a principle of ein shliach l'dvar aveira, and the shliach is the one who's going to be chayev, and not the mishaleach, right? But let's say that the shliach does not know. So the Ramah doesn't discuss that case. The Ramah discusses a case where the shliach's not a bachiyuva. So he says the shliach's not a bachiyuva. So then, arguably, as far as the principle of ein shliach l'dvar aveira is concerned, we don't apply the principle of ein shliach l'dvar aveira if the shliach's not a bachiyuva, and the mishaleach would be chayev. So the Sma says, the Sma quotes a machlokis between the Mordechai and the Nemuke Yosef. The Mordechai is in the first parak of Bava Metzia,
And then Mukhe Yosef is in Perak Meuba and Baba Kama. So the Mordechai says, let's say that he tells the Shliach, the Shliach's a Bach Yuba, but the Shliach doesn't know that the object is stolen. So the Mishleach tells the Shliach, I have an ox in the following person's house. Could you go in and you'll pick it up? In other words, it's really an act of Geneva, but the Shliach doesn't know that he's engaged in an act of Geneva. So the Mordechai says that in such a case, that's similar to the Shliach not being a Bar Chuyuva, and the Mishleach's going to be Chayiv in such a case. And Mukhe Yosef says, nah, Mishleach's not Chayiv in such a case. The Mishleach's not Chayiv in that case. That's not the case. There's a distinction between Bar Chuyuva and the Shliach simply acting Mishogeg. So therefore, we're not going to be Mechayiv the Mishleach in that case either. And the Sma adds, so nobody's going to be Chayiv. Somebody has to be Chayiv. So Sma says, yeah, the Shliach will be Chayiv. The Shliach is Chayiv, because we're going to apply the principle over here to Ein Shliach Advar Aveira. I understand applying the principle when the Shliach knows that he's stealing. But even in this case, where the Shliach doesn't know that he's stealing, I'm going to apply the principle of Ein Shliach Advar Aveira. Afilu b'makom she'ein ha'Shliach yodei masa iser. Even if the Shliach doesn't know that he has committed an iser, I'm going to apply Ein Shliach Advar Aveira. You hear that? So the Shach says, nothing doing. That's crazy. Then Mukhe Yosef never said that. All that the Mukhe Yosef said is that the Mishaleach is not Chayiv. He never went so far as to say that the Shliach is Chayiv. So the Shach says very, very strongly that it's absolutely impossible that Sheyeh HaShliach Chayiv Ein Lazeh Tam Klal. How can you say that a person doesn't know that he's stealing, that he's going to be Chayiv? He had no idea what he was doing, so you're going to impose a Chayiv upon him? So the truth is, this is a machlokes between the Tzos and the Machane Ephraim. The Tzos in Simon Chafei says that if a person is Gonev or Gozel, B'shogeg or Be'onis, he doesn't think that the person is Chayiv. He says, we have a special riboy, a petzatachas patzo, with respect to a mazik. And a mazik is always going to be Chayiv, bein B'shogeg, bein Be'onis, bein whatever the circumstances, it could be an onus. Tosos holds onus gomor, maybe not. Okay, but if it's pashtus, you know, the simple understanding. In most cases, whether it's a shogeg, whether it's onus, a mazik is always going to be chayiv. However, he says that riboy was only with respect to mazik, and that riboy was never with respect to again. Everybody agrees that a mazik is chayiv onus. That the machlokes tosis and rabban is whether he's chayiv onus gomer or not. But he says since the riboy was only with respect to this case of mazik, therefore with respect to anything else, we're not going to be mechayiv shogeg onus. And therefore, the Ktsos says that in his opinion, it seems to him that it's very clear, and he also derives this from our case, from the Nemuke Yosef, who's quoted by the Sma and the Shach. He assumes that the Nemuke Yosef meant to say not only is the Mishaleach Pater, because of Ein Shliach Advar Aveira, but the Shliach is also going to be a Pater. He says, Mashma Shneim Paturin. From the Nemuke Yosef, it's Mashma that both the Mishaleach and the Shliach are going to be Paturin in such a case. And he ends up by saying, Mitzarech Limud, that this requires a little bit further analysis. The Machane Ephraim brings various Rishonim that seem to agree with this idea of the Ktsos. But he says that if you take a look at the Gemara in Baba Kama on Daf Kuf Tes Vav, it talks about a ganav and a ganav u'machar, somebody who steals and he sells it, that the nignav is allowed to collect both from the ganav and he's also allowed to collect from the lokeach rishon if it was kodem yush. So that's mashma, even if the mocher didn't know that it was a stolen object, even if he thought that he was just, you know, in the that he was just buying a normal valid legitimate object. In due course, nonetheless, he would still have this responsibility that the Nignav would be allowed to collect from him. So therefore, he comes to the conclusion that even in the event that a person thinks that it belongs to him, nonetheless, in such a case, we would say that the person bears responsibility. So I thought that maybe, given our distinction that we've drawn between Gonev and Gozel, of how there is this much, you know, harsher threshold in terms of defining somebody as a ganav in the first place because of the midos that are involved. So maybe to be a gonav, a person has to have some sort of a kavana in order to be in that particular category, in order to have to pay a kefil. But in order to be a gozel, where the entire issur is simply that you're mechase mamon chavero, that you're taking away from mamon chavero, so there maybe it doesn't make a distinction whether it's b'shogeg or b'mezim. Maybe we could draw a distinction between gonev and gozel in this regard. So that was a chiddush that I thought might make sense, but I haven't seen anybody who says it. But, you know, as the tzoh says, you know, that adar tzarach limud, that is something I'm throwing out there, you know, for further discussion and analysis. I was I happened last Shabbos, Rabbi Avram Union, who's the Abezim Menayel of the Rabbinical Council of California. So he was visiting in Chicago. So I mentioned to him, I was talking about in Yonei Gnevei Gezela. So he told me a very interesting case that they had in California where there was a taina that somebody actually had of Gozel Ba'onis. That there was somebody who was in charge of a fund for a particular charity, a particular Mossad, and he collected a lot of the monies for that charity and so forth, and he was really in charge of it. He was like the gabbai, he was the one who was in complete control. But then he took over $1 million of the money that he had collected, and he spent it not on himself, not on a Porsche, a fancy car, a Lexus, or whatever, but he spent the money, gave it to various other tzedakos, rather than the one that he had collected it for. And he had the argument that he thought that since, you know, he's somebody who is given this type of authority, and everyone knows when he's collecting monies that he's a person who's involved with many, many charities, even though he was collecting it for this charity, so part of his job of being in charge of this charity was that he's in charge of the whole world, and therefore he could give $1 million to other charities as well. So he was like saying his bonus, he thought it was okay. Maybe it was a little bit more like Omer Mutter, I don't know, but he thought about that. But Rabbi Union treated it in his psak as this was a case where a person was that goes a ba'onis, so he analyzed whether the machlokis over here, ktsos, the machane yafayim. So he came to the conclusion, even if you hold like the ktsos, this is not a case of bishogeg or ba'onis because the person knew what he was doing. He knew that he was taking money that was given for one charity and giving it to another charity. So that's distinguishable from the case of the shliach who thinks that the object that the mishalech is asking him to collect genuinely belongs to the mishalech. Here, the trustee, the gabbai, knew that the money didn't belong, that the money belonged specifically to this charity. He just thought that it was okay to take money that belonged to this charity and to spend it in another charity. So they were mechayev him to pay the full $1 million. So in this particular case, everybody would agree that this is a maisa gzeila. Okay, but that's when it comes to gzeila. So I'll just conclude by going back to our original Gemara. So the original Gemara that we brought from Baba Basa, Daf's Kuf Samachay, so we said, are people really, really so bad? Are they really so lousy? The Ropa that we said, the Ropa Gezel, that everybody is involved in Gezel in some fashion. So we brought all these arguments. When it comes to Gezel, you can say, like Rashi says over here, that something's considered to be Gezel, even if Morin Lehetera, even if the person really doesn't have a nefarious intention in mind and so forth, then that's why it's so easy to be nikshol in gezel. And that's why I would suggest that even if it's ba'onis or b'shogeg, it might still be defined as a gezela. And because it's gezela, we don't treat it quite as harshly in terms of the payment of kapil and so forth. In terms of the harm that you might do to somebody else, it might be kilo notil as nafshel, like the Gemara says. But in terms of your own midos, so we don't treat it quite as harshly because the person doesn't necessarily realize the enormity of what they are doing. But it could be that it's not necessarily robi geneva. Maybe over here it really is bedavka. Maybe it's not robi geneva. That's a madrega, that a person is so sneaky and they're furtive and they're being insulting to a Kaddish Baruch Hu and they're very deliberately committing the avera. So maybe it's bedavka robi gezel, but even that we have to try to overcome.
Well, the next Thursday, my black is on at 3:00.
That's what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Rabbeinu Yonah.